Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I'm your host, Rob Oliver, and with me today is Brandon McCall. Brandon McCall is a teacher, a historian, a learner, a reader, a podcast listener, which I am absolutely thrilled about, an America lover, an aspiring ultramarathoner, a health foodie, and an outdoorsman. He is also the co-founder of Cornerstone Prep. But more than that, he is just a normal Christian guy trying to follow the Bible, tell other people about it, and give students and families hope about their future by equipping them for God's calling for their life. Brandon, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Rob, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here, man. I feel like when you reached out to me, it just seemed out of place to be on the Learning from Smart People podcast, but I count you a friend. You were somebody that I want to learn more from, and it's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, Brandon, the premise of the show is just simply this. Everybody out there knows more about something than I do. And so by bringing folks onto the show, I'm able to hear a little bit more about what they know, and it's able to expand my mind. Somebody once said that when the mind of man is expanded by new thought, it can never retract to its original shape. So
beautiful.
Having you on is going to expand my knowledge, and my mind can never go back to where I started out as. So tell me a little bit about being the co-founder of Cornerstone Christian. How did that work?
Man, that's such a good question. You know, so when I was in college, I went to Grove City College. I loved it. It was an interesting experience for me because I never was great at school. You know, growing up when I was young, things kind of came naturally to me. But when I got older in like high school age, school got really tough. And of course, you know, I was a little lazy and all that, but I never felt like I was a great student. I didn't love the academic parts of school so much, but I loved learning. I loved all those things. I loved engaging in conversations and reading and talking about complex things with people and having interesting conversations around the dinner table with family. That's where I feel like so much of the education that I had growing up came, kind of got fleshed out around the dinner table. And when I got to college, it was really tough, but I still loved it and eventually became a much better student. But it was interesting, at the end of my college experience, I was talking to my roommate, and we were both education guys, both history guys. We just loved studying the Bible, studying history, studying economics, politics, even things like science, you know, things that we might not have been interested in talking about all the time, like found their way into our conversations. And it was really interesting because we eventually got to this place where we had a conversation and said, what would it look like if we could go back and do it all over again? You know, if we could go back as two kids that didn't necessarily love school, but loved learning, what would it look like for us? So we started just jotting stuff down literally on a napkin at a dinner table in a cafeteria at Grove City College. And that, you know, kind of fun conversation, it was only done for fun. You know, it was probably, we were probably not studying or something we should have been doing. So we had this fun conversation, kind of entrepreneurial minded. Oh, this would be cool. We would do it this way and that. And we would read these things. We would not read those things. And over the course of a couple weeks, that conversation shifted and got more serious. When we actually went and talked to a professor and pitched this idea, hey, what do you think about school like this? And he just kind of said, you guys should do it. You're young. It's a chance in your life to take more risk without much consequence. You know, when you're young, unmarried, no family, that kind of thing. He said, you just do it.
Right.
So, yeah. So we were young and just, you know, crazy enough that we were like, yeah, let's do that. Let's start our own school. We could do things our way. We could, you know, not fall into the mold and follow what everybody else has done for all of history about school. We could do our own thing. So that's kind of where it came from, was like this little rebellious but loved of learning kind of thing that we said, hey, let's just do this, man. Why not?
So what I'm guessing is that you really had to kind of drill down to the nuts and bolts to start to define things and say, what is it that we're really doing here? What is the purpose of a school? And I mean, to me, the purpose of a school is education. And so you've got to look at this and say, what is education and how does it work? What is it all about? So tell me a little bit about just that idea. What did you decide? What is education and how do you approach that from a basic standpoint?
Man, it's such a good question. And it's interesting too, you know, before I dive into the what is education idea, when it came to the school end of things, I wasn't totally set up for all of the paperwork, legal, legislative thing. that was something my mom actually had started a school previously, and I kind of contacted her, and that was her strength. So she came on board with us, but it was a really good lesson in having your team in place. And you know, I was the guy that loved education, but didn't necessarily love dealing with payroll and paychecks and accounting and all that end of things. So like having that person to give me the personal freedom to deal with questions like, well, what is education? You know, that was like such a key thing. And I think that's something that I would just so encourage everybody to be self-aware enough about what you're good at, what you love, and what you need to delegate to somebody else. I think, you know, I've known just dozens and dozens of people in business and people in any context, like the importance of being able to know that and to have people in your life to speak into you, to have the wisdom to know what you're good at and what to delegate is really, really big.
That's one of the essential elements of team building, is finding people who have a diversity of strengths and bringing them all together so that what you're not so good at, someone else is good at. And that's the ultimate part of building a successful team. So it sounds like, you know, even just the planning phases of building a school, it's you with the passion for education, your mom with the experience on the other side of, you know, all the accounting and all that stuff. But you're now starting to say, okay, we're looking at a school, but to get back to the original question, what is education?
Yeah, it's such a good question. You know, I start with the premise that every single human being on this planet is different. They have different wants, desires. They have different dreams and ambitions, goals. And education should be our process for getting better at the stuff we're good at. And not just the stuff, but being better as the person that we are meant to be. And that takes work. It takes reading and studying and all that. And it's not just the learning stuff. And I think that's where school kind of conflates education a little bit, because it becomes about learning these things. Right? Not becoming something, to become more effective, to become a better listener, to become a more empathetic human being. But I think it starts with that idea that everybody's different, you know, and becoming educated, the way I see it, is like you're freeing your mind from feeling like you have to be somebody else or fit into somebody else's mold, but you're learning because you want to be good at something that you are supposed to be good at. You're becoming more effective at the calling for your life and more confident, whatever that calling is. Now that, I think too, with when it comes to education, I mean, today, as much as ever, it's important that we also understand we have a place in the world. You know, this world is big. History has spanned a long time. Like, we are very small in the scope of things. Where do we fit in? What's been done for us? I think we should become more grateful the more educated we are, the more free in our mind, in the sense of not feeling like we have to do everything to please other people, that kind of thing. But we can think freely for ourselves, that kind of thing. And that takes work. And it's not as easy as it sounds sometimes, you know. But I think that idea of being a lifelong learner, that is more than anything, I think should create in us the reality every single day that this life, by the grace of God, I have the opportunity every day to control the things I can control, and to, you know, with grace, not worry about the things that I can't, and improve the things I can improve, and be who I need to be, and do what I need to do. And as much as I'm able to do all of those things, I'm going to do that. And I think that's really when it came down to the school thing of starting a school. It was this deep desire that we had for like understanding first and foremost that everybody's different. And the school system is not built for everybody. You know, everybody goes through it, but it doesn't bring out that individual uniqueness. It doesn't bring out that individual, you know, passion and calling that everybody has. Like, it's interesting, Rob, because, you know, we'll sit here and say everybody will nod their head in agreement that everybody on the earth is different, and they all have different desires, and they're all different, you know, wants and goals, and they learn differently. By the way, there's a big one. You know, how many, you know, some people learn by listening to a podcast, others learn by reading, others learn by watching, most learn by doing. Yet school, for the most part, is exactly the same, and has been for the last, you know, 150 years in America anyways. Like, it's been largely the same. And I just think that when we first started talking about what is education, why should it look different? It's really started with that fundamental idea of we want people to be able to take this life, make the most of what their calling is in it. And first and foremost, even know what that calling is, to not feel like they have to be a good student and get straight A's. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to know their calling. And those are different things. So right. it's a lot, man.
I'm thinking about this, and as you're talking about it, I'm realizing the difference between what you're talking about is a classic education system where you have a test and you are studying for the test. And once you take that test, you dump all of the knowledge that you had onto a piece of paper, and then you leave it there and you don't retain that knowledge for the most part for the rest of your life, as opposed to creating people that have a thirst for knowledge, because the knowledge that they're gathering isn't just for the purpose of passing an exam, but it's for the purpose of being who they are called to be, being who they are supposed to be, strengthening themselves for whatever it is that they're going to do in the future. That's an amazing concept, and it's a total paradigm shift from what is generally looked at in the education system. You start thinking about this school, you start planning for the school, and then what happens?
Interesting. Yeah. So we said, hey, I guess we'll just, let's talk to some people in the local community. There was actually a school that closed down in the South Hills of Pittsburgh, a few years prior, about 4 years before, I think. And so there was a need, there was a gap in the area. So we went into that area, and the first thing we did, we said, let's talk to some, people that might be interested in supporting a Christian high school. At the time we were looking for ninth grade, and then we would expand on up through just high school. That's kind of where we felt like our space was for that particular time. So we went and talked to a bunch of other schools that had middle schools that didn't have high school. We felt very passionately. We didn't want to encroach upon anybody else's thing. We weren't looking to compete and have this mindset of putting other people out. So we just kind of went in and first started talking in the area with people that have been educational leaders, families that we'd heard of that had talked about Christian education being in the area before. So we just kind of canvassed, honestly. And then we, once we talked to a bunch of people, we set up some open houses and just tried to spread the word. But back then, that was like the early days of Facebook-ish. You know, it was kind of a new thing. So that was the pre-Facebook marketing campaign era. But we just really just started making phone calls and talked to people. And we had our first open house. I left Grove City College, drove down to Pittsburgh, met in the basement of a church to probably about 12 people, maybe less. And I remember it was such a smashing success. After our first meeting, we had a lady come up to me and she says, that sounds really great, but you don't have enough gray hair yet. So turn her.
Ouch.
Yeah, oh, man, it's like, well, if she could see me now, you know?
Right.
But so we just kind of pounded the pavement for a while. And it was one of those things, like if I had to do again now, it would probably seem a lot more intense at this phase of my life. It'd probably be a lot more stressful at the time, honestly. It was so much fun, and it was so, there was so much vision and just passion for kids and for education and introducing kids to learning and trying to tap into their uniqueness. There wasn't the stress of money and, you know, career and all that kind of stuff. It was just so much fun. And I try to maintain that zeal best you can. It's a little different when you have 37 staff members than when you have three. But that was the startup game, man. It was the hustle and then just a lot of prayer, a lot of meetings and a lot of meet a lot of people, talking to a lot of people. And it was a pretty cool little thing. You meet some pretty special people in those early phases of any kind of startup like that.
From there, you start off with a school. It's just ninth grade, and then eventually it expands and becomes a full high school. Then a couple years later, you end up merging with another school that has all the way from pre-K. And so now Cornerstone Prep is going pre-K all the way through 12. And what are you finding are the educational principles that are the same no matter what age? Because I'm thinking about people that are listening to the show and they're like, I'm not a high school principal and I'm not an educator. I'm not a teacher. But there are people out there like me as a speaker. Part of what I'm doing is I'm educating people, that are in positions of leadership in business. They are educating their employees. So what are the foundational elements of learning that you can share with our listeners so that it provides them with skills that would be useful to them on a daily basis, no matter what age the people they are dealing with are?
Man, that's such a good question. You know, it's interesting because I feel like a lot of times because we've all come up in the school system. We've all been schooled. And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying we have to have awareness about what we've all been through. I think a lot of times when that question even comes up, what should we be doing? What should we be learning? What are the things that are there, which is an awesome question. Our minds immediately go to, should I learn math, science? Should I learn, you know, the American Revolutionary War history from 1770s? We kind of go into this very, you know, school mode.
And right. It's like the silos, right?
100%.
Yep.
And so what I like to look at is like, what are the things, because your question is so cool, eh? What are the things that, regardless of time and space, actually are valuable for anybody, no matter where we are, what era of history, whatever. And I just, you know, you say that made me think of a couple of things. I just thought about, you know, learning is important no matter what. No matter what we're learning, you are learning and you're figuring out ways to learn. The other part is, are we thinking? How do we think? A lot of times folks don't actually take a pause and stop and, you know, sit back and actually think. And think deeply about it. What do I care about? What am I trying to do here? How am I doing things? Why am I doing things this way? Or thinking deeply about different topics. And I was having a Twitter conversation the other day, and I said, you know, one of the key things that can be an indicator of our ability to think freely is, can we listen to somebody else who disagrees with us? Maybe it's politically, religiously, business-wise, whatever. Can we listen to somebody who disagrees with us and actually want to hear what they are saying versus what we want them to be saying? Do we have that freedom of thought? But I think the other thing, big, big thing. So, I mean, can we learn? Can we think? But also, this is huge for me, is can we communicate? Communication, regardless of anything, is just, oh my goodness, it's rubber meets the road for so much of this. I mean, for myself, we can believe the right things, we can know the right things, but can we communicate them? In business, you can know all the right things, you can think all the right things, but if we can't communicate it in such a way that the world today is able to hear it and able to consume it, it doesn't really matter so much. And I think that's one of the cool things today, like what you're doing here with the podcast. People are, if you're listening to this, you are learning in a different way. You're learning via a podcast. This didn't exist 20, 30, 40, 100 years ago, right? This wasn't even much of a thing 5 years ago. But now it's a way that you are learning. And hopefully you're kind of thinking a little bit about some things. I would encourage anybody to practice communicating. I talk to my kids, very, very passionate about this, where I say, write. You have to write. Write every day. Write often. I don't care if you're in school, out of school, whatever. Write. And the purpose of writing is to help your thinking. And as you get better at thinking, hopefully, you get better at communicating, you get better at writing, you get better at having influence, which is ultimately the ultimate outpouring of an education should be to influence and bring about change in the world for something greater than yourself, to let ideas spread. But that all requires to be continual learners, requires to be deep thinkers and very clear and effective communicators in the way that the world currently exists, which I know is where a lot of businesses and people today get hung up on a little bit. You know, the world's changed and we don't like it. I say, you know, the world has changed in terms of a lot of the vehicles, but a lot of the core value things have never changed. That, like, being an effective learner, adapting to changing uncertain circumstances, being able to think on your feet, being creative, being adaptive, all that kind of stuff, and communicating using whatever tools are available. That stuff's eternal, man. And that stuff's never going to change as long as we are here.
You bring up so many good points, and there's a couple things. Number one, even that concept of what am I doing? What is the point of what I'm doing? I do a presentation for medical professionals, and part of what I'm talking about is taking a step back and looking not at the fact that I am, you know, injecting medication or I am taking temperatures or I'm doing that, but what is the impact of what I'm doing? And medical professionals, especially today, the frontline medical professionals are saving lives. They're keeping people safe, but they're allowing someone like me to be at home, to live with my family, to do what I'm doing today, running podcasts, do all of these things, go out and speak. They're allowing grandparents to be healthy enough to spend time with their grandkids and go out in their yard and pursue all the things that are of interest to them. that's the impact of what people are doing. And you've got to, sometimes you get so close to your job, you get so close to your work that you're just seeing the task that's in front of you. And you need to take that step back to see what's the impact of what I'm doing. And that's very important. The other thing that you were talking about is communication and the ability to get a message across. Right now, we are in a totally new era of communication, especially with all of this stay-at-home stuff. We have so many ways to communicate. We've got Zoom and Google Meet, and we've got FaceTime, and we've got text and cell phones and emails and just any number of things. Number one, I would ask you, as you're using these different tools as an educator, what are your experiences with that? And number two, even though we have so many different ways to communicate, how effective is the communication that's happening over these different technologies? So I guess that's two questions for you.
Yeah, you don't have to remind me if I forget. I'm not that smart, Rob. But great. I mean, it's an awesome question. You know, first of all, the effectiveness of it. One of the cool things about Cornerstone that we were so fortunate to have great teachers who had the leadership in well in advance to implement a lot of systems that have allowed this transition to be very seamless for us. Our kids have had Google Classroom accounts. Our kids have had Gmail accounts. We have Chromebook, so kids have laptops, they have access. I know a lot of the public schools have been struggling because that infrastructure wasn't in place. So the infrastructure being in place before the crisis came actually allowed us to be very agile when it happened, to be able to pivot quickly and move quickly. And really, honestly, we had a pretty seamless transition in terms of the communication. And I think that's a big thing for any business today to be thinking out ahead of, what if there was some kind of thing like this? I mean, now a lot of restaurants are forced to adapt and do online ordering. That was something that a bunch of restaurants were doing before, but now it's a necessity. So you're much better off trying to get those things in place beforehand. But we've been using things like Google Meet, which is nice because that already is kind of built into your Gmail suite things that our kids already had set up. So that's worked effectively. We've been meeting with our staff via Google Meets. I've been meeting with students on Zoom conferences, and it's worked pretty well. I mean, email, obviously, the tried and true, communicating with families. Interestingly, one thing I just added and started doing about 2 or 3 weeks ago was trying to do more video, short form video communication with families, setting out a weekly, just putting a link in the email. Because one of the things with communication, it's difficult, as we all know, and whatever you do with the statistics here, they say communication is only 11% what you actually say. You know, it's whatever, 38% how you say it, and 50-some percent. Your body language. And that's so much of that communication is lost when it's just email or just texting. So trying to communicate effectively, because what are we trying to do? Like you said earlier about the change you're trying to bring about, really, like with a doctor, you're not trying to fix a person, you're trying to allow them more time with their family to make memories. That's what you're really doing.
Yes.
So as communication is geared that way, I think it's such an important thing to realize, like, if we communicate more effectively, it can better bring about that change, that real impact. And for me, I keep it lighthearted, you know, hey, everybody, you know, because people get an email and I don't know, maybe people out there, you get that ding and it's stressful. It's not like an exciting thing to get an email from school. I'm deeply empathetic that I'm the principal of a school. When you get an email from me, it's probably not the most exciting thing.
Yeah, it's a student. That was always my fear, that if my teacher ever called my house, I was a dead man.
It's so true, man. It's so true. But it was the communication has been pretty good. And one of the tough things, honestly, is really communicating into the dark space. And what I mean by that is the people that aren't going to respond back. You know, with we have about 200 students, so we have about 130-ish families at our school represented. So that's parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, the people that are kind of in that network. I know, for example, if I send an email to everyone, so that's, let's call it 150 emails go out, you know, probably 5 people are going to respond. Even if I didn't ask them to respond, most people are going to open it, check it out or whatever. But the ones that are tough are the ones that we kind of, it's kind of going into a dark space of, I don't know, are they reading it? I'm asking, what can we do to serve you? But I also know that sometimes the people that need served the most, they're not going to respond to that general question, that open-ended. If anybody, and we feel good about it, right? We all feel good, the business owners and school administrators and teachers, if anybody needs help, you know, and that's the right thing to do, by the way. But I think we have to understand, like, whenever we're seeing things, and this is, I've been really excited to see, like, a lot of our teachers, they're doing such a fabulous job with this. Whenever there's that, I've just invented the term, the dark space of, you know, there's no communication. That's the time to make a phone call and say, like, hey, I noticed that you haven't been responding to this. It's okay. I just want to make sure everything's okay. And then ask, like, how can I serve you? Not can we serve? You know what I mean? Everybody needs served somehow, but really trying to, like, take the burden on ourselves and understand people do have needs. It just takes our time and empathy to, like, to really learn what those things are. And that's an important thing.
Definitely. What you're saying is that there's more to communication than just getting the message out there. There also needs to be that feedback that says, did my communication go through? And are you receiving this? And there needs to be that personal touch and feedback on it. And especially right now, when people are so isolated, sometimes when you're not hearing from someone, just to give them a call, shoot them a text, whatever it is, to make sure that they're getting that communication is great. I'll follow up on the second part of that question because it was so long ago that I asked it. How do you create effective communicators? Because there's so many different ways to communicate, but there are times when I feel like the quality of communication has decreased as the quantity of communication has just become overwhelming.
Man, that's a great question. It is very noisy out there, isn't it?
Yeah. You're getting bombarded on every side.
It's in the irony is in a world with just so much overwhelming communication going on every single day, day in, day out. I mean, people are spending, you know, 6 hours a day on their phones via social media, all that kind of stuff. How do you get good at it? I would really, really encourage people. First and foremost, I'm a big writer. You have to write and understand writing, not just for the purpose of communicating via writing, but it helps you clarify how you communicate and to really, really simplify your messaging. There's a lot of great resources out there that help people do this. Guys like Don Miller, he has a company called StoryBrand. He's done a fabulous job. Seth Godin, some really good marketing guys. And I would say, don't be afraid of marketing. Marketing and sales are kind of different things. Marketing is just really helping people tell their stories more effectively. And everybody, whether you are a business or a private person, you're just a guy or you're just a lady, you're just a kid. If somebody asked you, what is it that you do? What does your business do? You know, we should be ready with that answer. What do we, and I love what you said earlier, what you really do. You know, I was just listening to a guy the other day. He was talking with a friend on the phone talking about, he has a deck company. He said, what do you do? Well, we make decks. And he's like, no, you provide spaces for families to meet so they can share meaningful interactions. We get all that. But yeah, I would.
Bingo.
Yeah, totally, man. And I would just say, like, you have to practice. It just takes practice doing making videos, making podcasts, sending email, whatever the case is. You got to get out of your comfort zone a little bit and you have to just be willing to practice. But I would also really encourage people, everybody, now this could be incorrect, but I do believe that everybody has a vehicle or a medium for communication that they are most comfortable with. Getting better at that vehicle is a really good use of your time. So for some people, they might be very uncomfortable on video. You know, I get it. They might not be good on video. So if you're a business and you're trying to, you know, you want to increase your influence as a business and, like, serve more people, making videos might not be your best move. I would also say you got to kind of get better at it. It's where we live in. You have to understand on some level, you got to get better. You might need help. You might need a coach. You might need training. Doesn't mean you shouldn't be doing it, but if you're a really effective writer, make blogs, you know, take good pictures. Pictures tell amazing stories. You know, really big into that with Cornerstone, you know, like showing pictures, and our Facebook and our Instagram, I've really worked hard to try to show people, here's what's really going on. I want to help people see what they might not have seen before and communicate with pictures and communicate with short form copy and text. Like, that's really, really important in this day and age to be able to do that effectively. You just got to practice too. Yeah. Get over yourself. You're not going to be great at it. You just got to do it and get better.
Right. The thing that I'm hearing you say is writing is a way of putting your thoughts on paper. And the nice thing about that is so many times we have communication today that you don't even think about what you're doing. You're sending out a text, you're commenting on Twitter, you're sending out something on somebody's Instagram, and you have a gut reaction. It goes out, you hit the send button, and then it's gone, and you're never getting that back to edit it and think about the impact of it. But when you're writing, and then you have a chance to go back and reread your writing, it helps you to develop your thought process. It helps you to create something that, you know, just create a process that helps you be more aware of what's going out. And then additionally, as you write, that's going to be something that's going to help you if you are doing video, if you are doing podcasts, if you're doing blogs, all of that. It's going to help you build what I would call a communication toolbox. You have so many different tools in there. One of them you're really good at using and keep honing your skills there to become a master craftsman with it. But the more you work at it, the better you're going to get with all of the tools that are in that communication toolbox. Brandon, you have been exceptionally helpful today. I think that everyone has learned something. You have definitely established that you are smart. Now, at the end of every show, I have three questions to establish your humanity, because it's learning from smart people. We need to find out who you are as a person. So your three questions are, number one, what is one thing that can instantly make your day better?
Oh, somebody sharing a friendly email. It's amazing. Yeah, just a short little thing, a friendly email. It really just touches my heart immediately.
Fantastic. How do you take your coffee?
In the morning, bulletproof. So that is a very complex concoction. Throughout the rest of the day, just black.
Lastly, what is your most prized possession and how come?
Wow, that is such a good question. Oh man, my most prized possession. That is a wonderful question. Something that I really like. I run. I'm a runner. I think I'm not a runner, but I like my watch a lot. But I tell you what, honestly, stuff that my brother gifted me a t-shirt, and sometimes it's those little things that just mean the world to me. I don't know, little things, man. Little things for me are big deals. So I'll go with more like the sentimental gift from family, that kind of thing.
Brandon, thanks for being on the show. Now, if folks are interested in learning more about Cornerstone, what's the website? What's a phone number that they can reach you at?
Thank you so much. So you can find us online at cornerstoneprep.net. And our phone number, if you want to reach out, is 412-466-1919. Check us out on Facebook and Instagram too. That's Cornerstone Christian Preparatory Academy. Check us out on there. We do a lot on there. We love our community. We love our people. And even if you're not a parent, we'd love to have you on board. Nonetheless, you're valuable to us and our community.
Brandon, I'll put all that stuff in the show notes so that people can connect with you as easily as possible. I appreciate you being on the show. Everyone, you have been listening to Learning from Smart People. My guest today was Brandon McCall. I'm Rob Oliver, and I leave you with this reminder: if you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.